And we're holding on Peches Omodes, the second line from the bottom. We learned yesterday about the whole situation where a woman has Nichsim Malug, or at this point the Gemara is going to assume, at least for the next piece of the argument, that there might be no difference between that and Nichsit Tzoyin Barzel, which are the ones that she brings into the marriage and the husband actually assumes responsibility for them. So unlike Nichsit, and he actually owns their goof, unlike Nichsit Malug, where he owns only the Peres. Anyway, so we were talking yesterday then about the Nechosim of the mother, whether of the wife, the mother, whatever, whether she's able to give them away or whether her husband has first rights over them. We have the story with Rav Shmuel Ba'aba, where Rav Yirmiyah Ba'aba had said that that in fact he would be able to keep them, even though the father wants them. And on the other hand, we have Rav Yehuda saying in the name of Shmuel that he can't, and we were discussing that back and forth. The last thing we said was that there is a takana from the time of the Tanurim called Takana Usha, which says that when a woman sells Nichsim Malug while her husband was alive, then afterwards her husband has the right to take it away from the buyers, because even though he only has Kenyan Peiris, the Chachamim strengthened his shibud and made him as though he's the first Lekeach. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Idi Ba'oven Afanan Nami Tanena. So Rav Idi Ba'oven says, in fact, we can show that there's a braisa that also implies this takonis usha, and that implies that there is this din that the property that the husband has a certain degree of ownership over the Nichsim Malug to the extent where he can prevent the sale of it from taking effect. Part of what we're going to quote is actually a Mishnah in Masech the Makas, and Tosfos wonders why the Gemara is not bringing the proof directly from the Mishnah and discusses that point, but what we're going to be bringing is a Braisa based on that. So the Braisa says, Me'idim onu b'ish koinish agirishas ishle v'nosim k'subasa. Two Edim come to Beis Din, and they testify about Pliny that he divorced his wife and paid her her k'suba. Meanwhile, the man is saying, I didn't divorce her, so then there's no k'suba to talk about. Right now, in fact, that is how it is. We end up finding Edim Zomim, and we end up finding Edim who are mazim them, and who say that there was no divorce here in the first place. They're still happily married, and they're still living together. Now Rashi explains like this: if there were other Edim that she was divorced, then there's no question, then there's no complication over here. The Edim Zomim would pay out the value of the ksuba, and that's that. Because after all, what would happen? We would say they wanted to deprive her of the value of her ksuba. They wanted to say that the 200 zuz, or whatever the amount is, that she should have gotten is in fact not coming to her because it's already been paid. Meanwhile, it hadn't been paid yet. So therefore, they pay out that 200 zuz, and that's that. The difference is that here we're talking about they're still married. So therefore, so we can't say they should pay the whole value of the ksuba. The ksuba may never be paid out. She might die first, and her husband's going to yashin her. So the ksuba, in a certain sense, is not worth its full value right now. So the nimtzu zomim, now when these edim come out to be edim zomim, ain't only yishamu kol ksubasa. So we don't pay. We don't say that they should pay the entire value of a ksuba. Ella tovas hanah ksubasa. Rather, all they should pay is the tovas hanah of that ksuba. Namely, in other words, if a person were to buy the value of this ksuba on that chance, how much would a person be willing to pay? With the understanding that if she gets divorced, or if her husband dies first, then there's a ksuba to be paid, and then it'll be paid to him. And then on the other hand, if she dies first and there's no ksuba, then he's going to forfeit his money. So how much would a person be willing to pay for that kind of thing? And of course, it's going to depend on the circumstances. If she's young and healthy, then if both she and her husband are young and healthy, then that's going to be much different than, for example, if she's on the verge of dying, or vice versa, if her husband is on the verge of dying, that sort of thing. So that kind of thing, this Tovas Hanah, she's losing right away. Rashi points out, in the sense, she could have sold her ksuba at any time with this Tovas Hanah. So therefore, that would be how much the Edim Zomim are paying. Ezehu Tovus Hanas Ksuba. So that's the Braisa continues with exactly that. How do we calculate that Tovus Hana of the Ksuba? Umdin, we evaluate Kama Odom Rotsa Litin the Ksuba Shalzu. How much would a person be willing to pay to buy this lady's Ksuba? She'im this Amla Onis Gausha, with the understanding that if she's widowed or if she's divorced, then there will be a Ksuba to collect, and then he's going to collect it instead of her. The Imesa Yerushana Baila, but that on the other hand, if she dies first, her husband yaushins her, and this guy's investment is forfeit. So the Braisa says that's how you calculate the Tovus Hana, and therefore in this case that would be what the Edom Zomim pay her. So what does this have to do with what we're talking about? So Rabbi Idi Ba'oven says the Sakadai Lesser with Takonas Usha. If you were going to tell me that there's no Takonas Usha, which we touched on yesterday, Tosfos had pointed out that according to Rabbi Yochanan, so Tosfos had asked what the need was for Takonas Usha according to Rabbi Yochanan, who said anyway that Kinyan paid his Kinyan Aguf. Now over here, Tosfos found a way to say that Rabbi Yochanan would say that it's necessary no matter what. But there are other Gemaras where Tosfos and other Rishonim say that in fact maybe not. Maybe in fact, according to Rabbi Yochanan, there was no Takonas Usha in the first place. According to him, you could say, for example, that they deliberated on it, but they didn't conclude that they should make this Takana or whatever. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Idiba, and here we had in the previous piece of the Gemara, we had where Rabbi Yirmiya Ba'aba apparently seemed to be ignoring Takanas Usha, because he was saying, in the case with Shmuel Ba'aba and his mother and his father or stepfather, that he should be entitled to the property. If it were for Takanas Usha, then we would say he's not. So now, Rabbi Idiba Oven is saying, I can prove to you from this Braisa that Takanas Usha actually exists. Because otherwise, if it didn't, Amai Yerushena Baila, why would her husband necessarily yaushin her? At this point, we're assuming that the dinim that would apply to Nichse Malug would also apply to Nichse Tzon Barzel. Well then, she's a Huxuba includes the Nichse Tzon Barzel, because those are the things that, to begin with, the assets that she brings when she first gets married, and those are written into the Huxuba, and the husband accepts a Chrayus on them, and they become his, unlike the Nichse Malug, where he gets only payus. Here he has the actual goof of them. So if we're going to say there's no Takonas Usha, Amai Yerushan and Baila, why would her husband necessarily inherit her when she dies, and therefore not have to pay the Ksuba? Kasbin Ksubasa Legamri, why wouldn't she be able to sell her Ksuba entirely, or which is to say, she should be able to sell the Nichsetzer and Barzel that are in the Ksuba, and that should be a valid sale. So the fact that we're saying that in that case, if she dies first, her husband is going to yaushin her. That implies that therefore the ksuba is not necessarily worth its full amount. Only Tovus Hana. That implies that yes, the husband necessarily yaushins her, whether nichset tzon barzel or whether nichset malug, and therefore that shows that Takonas Usha is valid, that the husband has the right to do that. However, Amar Abaya, but Abaya says that's not really a proof. Im Omru B'nichse Malog, Yomru B'nichse Tzayin Barzel, even if we were to say that without Takonas Usha, the wife can sell Nichse Malog, fine, because Nichse Malog, after all, the goof belongs to her. The goof belongs to her, and after all, when it goes up or down in value, that's her gain or her loss. Unlike Nichse Tzon Barzel, why do we call them Tzon Barzel, which literally Tzon Barzel means iron sheet, is because the value of them is guaranteed. The husband guarantees in the ksuba that if they depreciate in value, he's going to make up that difference. You actually have an arrangement called Tzon Barzel, which we'll learn about in a few months, Bez Hashem and Bava Metzia, where Reuven owns sheep, and he gives them to Shimon to raise, and they make an agreement between them about that Reuven is guaranteed to always get back the value of the sheep eventually, even if the sheep die or whatever, then Shimon will take that loss and reimburse Reuben, and you have dinim about that, which we'll learn in Bava Metzia in connection with the dinim to make sure that there's no ribis involved. But in any case, the point is that for that reason, the arrangement with the nechassim that the wife brings into the marriage in the first place, and which are written into the ksuba, those are called sein barzel for the same reason, because she's guaranteed to get back the value of them eventually. If they depreciate, the husband takes it on himself to make up the loss. Now, nichsa malug is not like that. Nichsa malug, the keren, the goof, belongs to her, and if it goes up or down in value, it's her gain or her loss. So Abaye is saying, you could say very well that if it weren't for Takanas Usha, then she'd be able to sell her Nichsa Malug, and the husband couldn't object. But we certainly wouldn't say the same thing as far as the Nichsa Tzoyin Barzel, because those are in the husband's Rishus in the first place. So this Braisa that Yurub Idi Ba'oven just quoted is not necessarily talking about Nichsa Malug, it's talking about the Nichsa Tzoyin Barzel, because after all, we're talking about her Ksuba, and the Nichsa Tzoyin Barzel are part of that. So that even without Takonas Usha, the din in this Mishnah would still be valid, that we would say she can't fully sell the Ksuba. The most she could sell is Tovas Hana, because there's not necessarily a guarantee that the buyer is going to collect that Ksuba, because it depends who's going to die first. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Amar Abaye, Tovas Hana, Hoyov Osel Yoda, Neima Bamilsa. So Abaye says, you know what, as long as we're talking about Tovas Hana, but once this came to our hand, in other words, once the point was brought up regarding Tovas Hana, then name of the Milsa, let's talk about something about it. Let's talk about a din regarding Tovas Hana. Namely, if a woman does sell her ksuba with Tovas Hana, like what we just said before, where she sells the ksuba for Tovas Hana, then Abaye points out, Le'isha Havya, that money from the Tovas Hana belongs to her. The husband is not able to say that I should be able to take that money. And Abaye says, how can I prove that? The Sakadaitach Labal Havya, if you're going to say that money goes to the husband, then in the case of the Braisa that Rabbi Idi Ba'oven brought, now Abaye is saying the Braisa is not a solid proof about Takonas Usha, because the Braisa may be referring to Nichsa Tzoyin Barzel rather than to Nichsa Malug. Fine, but the bottom line is that the Braisa is telling us that the woman can sell her ksuba for Tovas Hana, and so we have to consider in that case, if we were going to say that the Tovas Hana go to Isak Adat Labal, have you, if you're going to say that money goes to the husband, Leimurullah Edim, then why shouldn't these Edim Zomin be able to say, my Afsidinach, after all, with our false Eders, yes, it turns out we were false Edim, we were Edim Zomin, but after all, what did we make you lose that we should have to pay you? Ehavis Mizabna Lala Tovas Hana, after all, if you would have sold the ksuba for Tovas Hana, Baal have a shokum linach, then your husband would have taken that money from you. So you wouldn't even bother selling it in the first place. Or if you did, it wouldn't really be worth anything to you. So therefore, why should we have to reimburse you? Why should we have to reimburse you for something that anyway wouldn't have been worth that for something that anyway wouldn't have even been worth it to you? So the fact that they can't say that, the fact that we do make them pay the Tovas Hana to her, shows, says Abaye, that the money belongs to her. An interesting thing in that connection, by the way, is the Nesivus learns from here an interesting thing. Now on the face of it, what's the Gemara's question? She could say, you know what, when a person is buying my Tovas Hana, then they're taking a risk because I might die first, or my husband might die or divorce me first, and therefore they're taking a risk, as we said before. Well, you could say, after all, I myself, fine, I have the risk. The husband might take the money, but he might not. So why don't we say that? So the Nesivus learns from here an interesting point, that when you have something that you can't sell, you have something that has a personal use to you, but you can't sell it to somebody else, then the Nesivus says, you can learn from that, it's not really considered something that has a monetary value, and a mazik wouldn't necessarily have to pay for that. the Achronim talk about interesting things in that regard. What if, for example, a person has, let's say, you have nowadays a lot of things which don't really have a saleable value anymore. Say, for example, you know, you have a person's well-worn clothing. You have, you know, back in the old day, even worn clothing was worth money, and you'd sell it to somebody else who's poor and then can't afford better clothing. Nowadays, a lot of times, worn clothing is really not worth anything. What happens when a person's favorite shirt is worn out, for example? Sometimes they might give it in one of those donation boxes or something, and it's maybe worth something, but sometimes not even. Sometimes you'll just throw it away. And many of you have other examples like that. Let's say, for example, a pair of glasses, lots of other things like that. Should a mazik have to pay for those things if he damaged them based on this nesivus? Maybe not, because they don't actually have a saleable value anymore. So there's a good deal of discussion among achronim about that. It's an interesting side point in the halachas of nezikin that comes out of this one line of the Gemara. Anyway, the point is that Abaye is saying, so you can see from the fact that the Edim definitely have to pay for that amount, that Tovus Hanah, that demonstrates that Tovus Hanah is definitively hers, and there's no possibility that the husband gets it. On the other hand, Rav Shalman says that's not really a proof. Because Mishub, you could say, you know why, it's true, she might say, fine, my husband would take the Tovus Hanah, but nevertheless, I still have a reason why I would want to sell my Ksuba, Mishum De'ika, Ravach Besa. After all, it earns more money for the household. So she could say that, she could say it's true that, So it's true that what happened? You Adam Zimmerman testified that I already was divorced and was paid my ksuba. In fact, I'm not divorced at all. I'm still happily married. Therefore, the ksuba itself is kind of up in the air whether it's going to be something that ends up having a value or not. And by the way, Pnei Yeshua has a big problem with the whole question over here of how you can even sell a ksuba in the first place. Isn't it a davar shaloi bala olam? And he says actually he can't really find a way to understand how such a thing is b'chlal possible. And Acharonim talk about various possibilities how such a thing could be. But anyway, the point is, and the Pnei Yeshua actually says, in fact, that our Gemara over here is going according to a Hava Amina in Ksubas that says that to a certain extent a person can sell a remakdish a Dovah Shaloi Bala Olam, and then in that case that might be why this concept of her selling her Ksuba with Tovus Hanah is not, when the Rambam talks about this whole matter of a woman paying for Nizikin, which was the subject of our Mishnah, which is how we got into this whole discussion, the Rambam doesn't differentiate whether she has Nuchsim Malorg or not, because, the Rambam may hold that, she can't sell her Ksuba or her Nuchsim Malorg for Tovus Hanah because of the problem of Dovah Shaloi Bala Olam. Anyway, the point is that, sort of Shalman is saying no, because you could say like this. She could say to the Edim Zeman, it's true, if I do sell my ksuba for Tovus Hanah, there, I might not be keeping the money, my husband might take it. However, there is a gain in the fact that now we have more money around the house. So therefore, so you caused that loss, the fact that I still would have gone to and sold the ksuba, and therefore you should have to reimburse me for the money for the Tovus Hanah that I could have sold my ksuba for, which you deprived me of. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava Hilchasa, the bottom line halacha is Tovus Hanah Laisha, that Tovus Hanah of selling the ksuba does in fact belong to the wife, the Eina Baal Ochel Peiris, and the husband does not get the Peiris, meaning he does not get this Tovus Hanah or any Peiris from it, unlike all Nichsim Alug. My timer, why is that, says Rava? Because to begin with, the Chachamim made a takana that the husband is entitled to peiros from the nichsim alug, peiros to peiros like takinu le'rabbanon, but the Chachamim did not make a takana that he should get peiros of peiros. Now, to be exact, Tosfos says that's not always the case. Usually, we don't say, for example, if let's say her nichsim belug include a field or not a field, let's say her nichsim belug include animals, for example, and those animals eventually give birth to offspring, and those offspring give birth to others. We certainly don't say the husband is not entitled to those. What we mean is, in other words, over here, when the money is to begin with coming from something from an outside thing rather than from the nichsim belug themselves, then we're saying that the husband, that the chachamim only made a takana, that you have cases where they're considered nichsim alug, but in this case, we're not going to go so far as to say that he would get the payrus of that nichsim alug, namely the money that she got for selling it with Torah Sana. So in other words, Rishon explained that the Gemara is using the words payrus and payra and payra to payra a little bit loosely over here, but what it means is, in other words, that in a case like this, where it's not even part of her essential nichsim alug, it's only something where we're saying she's taking her ksuba or some part of the assets in her ksuba and selling them to Torah Sana, then we don't necessarily, when we're saying the husband is not entitled to them because that's not included in the takana of the chachamim of him getting nichsim alug. So the Gemara continues. Ki osed a papa v'Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yishur mi'Bei Rav. When Rav Papa and Rav Huna. So the point is, in other words, so we don't have a proof. We don't. So Rav Idiba Oven's proof about Takonas Usha is not necessarily valid, as Abaye pointed out, because that Mishnah can be talking about, that Braisa rather can be talking about her selling the Nichsetzin Bar. So that's something else. On the other hand, what we're saying is, if she does sell her ksuba or some part of it, then the Torah Hana that she gets from it belongs to her, even though Rav Shalman was saying not necessarily is there a proof from that braisa, but nevertheless, Rava says that is how the halacha is. Now, continuing with this topic on Takonas Osha, the Oster of Papa, Rav Huna Breda Rishur, Bei Rav, when Rav Papa and Rav Huna Breda Rishur came from the yeshiva, Amri, they said, Tanenu l'takonas osha. Our Mishnah here in Bava Kama gives a proof for the validity of takonas osha. Namely, our Mishnah had said, ha'evid v'ha'isha p'gi'osan ra. We said that an evid, knani, and a woman, a married woman, it's bad to get involved with them in matters of nizakin, because achoivo behen chayev, if somebody else injures them, he's chayev, same as he would with any other person, behem shechol v'achayim turim, but if an evid or an isha injures somebody else, then they are potter, because they don't have any assets. Now, says Rav Papa and Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yishur, v'yisakdadach less of a takonas usha, if you were going to tell me that there's no takonas usha, and she's able to sell her nichsim alug, and the husband has no rights to go against that, well then, there's a very simple solution. Tazbin nichsim alug v'titen lei. Then let her sell her nichsim alug, and give them to the nizik. So therefore, the fact that the Mishnah implies that there's no way to do that. All the Mishnah had said is right now there's no way for the Eved or the Isha to pay. Only if the Eved ever gets freed, if the wife ever is widowed or divorced, then they'll have assets. Then they'll pay out the Nezek, implying right now they have no assets that they can sell for the purpose. Well, that shows, say, Rav Papa and Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yishur, that Takonas Usha is valid, and therefore she can't sell her nichsim alug. If she does, then her husband is going to be able to take it. Away from the lekeach. So the Gemara says back, why is that a proof? Why, according to your svara, nihinami di isil takonas usha v'leimotzi mezabna? Fine, even if you're going to say that there's takonas usha, so she can't sell the v'leimotzi mezabna legamli, so she can't sell the assets completely because the husband eventually will take them away. Tazben nichsim alug b'tovas hana. Still, shouldn't she be able to sell them, as we just said in the previous Gemara, for tovas hana? Shouldn't she be able to sell them for tovas hana v'titimlay, and then she should be able to pay the other guy? Ella de lesla. Evidently, we have to be assuming that the case would be where she doesn't have. Hachinami. So therefore, the same thing. Even if you're going to say there's no takonas osha, you could also say the less law that our Mishnah could be talking about where she has nichsim alug. So the Mishnah is not saying across the board that every married woman is going to be potter from paying for not potter, but she's going to be unable to pay for nizakin right now for injuries to somebody else, for her injuring somebody else because she doesn't have assets. we could say that that's only if she has no nichsim alug. If she had nichsim alug, she would be able to sell them materis hanah. So therefore, so there's no proof one way or the other for, there's no proof one way or the other from our Mishnah as far as takana sosha. And again, here is where the Pnei Yeshua points out, it's very difficult to understand that, he says that, the fact is the ksuba is a dover shaloi bala reshusa. So how could she even be selling it in the first place? And he says he looked at chazanu al kol tzidei. We looked at every possible angle on this, and it's very hard to say how this could be unless you say again, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bar Dei Yeshua himself hold that themselves hold in the Gemara and Ksubas that it's possible to sell such assets. So then all Gemara would be only according to them, but it wouldn't be the maskana. Wouldn't be a liberty to say, he says. So they're saying you can prove Takanas Osha from our Mishnah, because evidently the Mishnah is saying that even if she has Nichsim Alog, there's no possibility of her selling them and raising the money to pay for her Nezek. But we're saying not necessarily, because maybe the Mishnah is talking about she has no Nichsim Alog in the first place. The Gemara asks, never mind the Nichsim Alog. What about, V'tazvan ksubasa v'tovas hanah v'titin light. Fine, why can't she sell her ksuba for tovas hanah, as we just discussed in the previous piece, and then she should have money from that. Even if you say that the husband can block the sale of the nichsim alug, because he has payers of them, but you have the eventual value of huksuba, the 100 or 200, the basic amounts of the ksuba. Keep in mind, by the way, we learned in the Sefer Ksubas, and we're going to discuss the differences between these later on in the sugya. You have three parts of the ksuba, basically, in terms of the actual monetary amounts. You have the basic amount, which is called ikur ksuba, 100 for an almana, 200 for a b'sula. Then you have tosfos ksuba, which is where the husband voluntarily agrees to add more to the ksuba, that he himself is going to pay her out of his own pocket, or his yoshim, if he dies. And then you have the nichset sein barzel that are written into the ksuba, and the husband assumes responsibility for them. We've talked so far about the ksuba, and about the ikur ksuba, and we've talked about the nichset sein barzel. Later on, we'll talk a little bit about the tosfos ksuba. The point is that, even if you're going to say she can't sell the nichsim alug are not a part of the ksuba. That's something else. That's a tnai ksuba, namely the takana of the chachamim, that money, that asset that she brings in to the marriage after they're married and which were not written into the ksuba, become nichsim alug, and she keeps the goof of them and the husband and is entitled to the payer. So again, the question is, fine, you can say the nichsim alug, we can say maybe that because of takonas osha she can't sell them, or we can say that maybe our missionary is talking about a case where there are no nichsim alug. But there's still the ksuba, at least the ikur and the tosfos, that she should be able to sell, at least the ikur that she should be able to sell, no. So why is the Mishnah saying even if we're going to say that the statement in our Mishnah about the isha is not a blanket statement, you could say whether it depends on whether she has nichsim alug, but even if there's no nichsim alug, why shouldn't she be able to sell her ksuba itself for tovas hanah and use that money to pay off the nezek, or at least part of the nezek? It may not be very much. Tovas hanah is not necessarily going to be very much. It may not pay for the entire hezek, but at least it'll pay for something. Why not? The answer is because we can say Hamani Reb Meir, because we can answer that on Mishnah goes according to Reb Meir, the Amar also la Adam Shiyasha Es Ishtei after the Shah Achas Baloi Ksuba. He says that a husband is not allowed to stay with his wife for even a short time without a ksuba. Well, then if she sells her ksuba, then there's no ksuba, and then therefore there'd be a problem. No, but the point is that she's selling the ksuba in the sense that, well, that's the Gemara's going to ask. That's the Gemara's going to ask. On the face of it, the amount that he has to pay out still remains the same if there's going to be a paid out. Again, now keep in mind, the payment of the ksuba is always going to be contingent on whether she dies first or whatever, but that's, the Gemara is immediately going to ask. Right now, the Gemara tried to give an answer that if she sells the ksuba, if she sells the value of the ksuba, then it comes out. There's no ksuba, and therefore, then you'd have what Reb Meir is saying. They can't stay living married together. The problem with that is that, the problem with that is, after all, what's the whole reason behind what Reb Meir is saying? Because you don't want it to be too easy for him to divorce her. If he knows that there's a big financial impact involved, then he's not going to be so quick to divorce her. Well then, so here for the same reason, he still won't divorce her. De'imagadishla, because if he does, also hanach the zavni gavolol k'subasimine, because then the people that she sold it to will come and collect it. So the same financial impact he's going to have, you're going to have either way, whether she sells it or not. So why shouldn't she be able to sell it? So that's the question. Even if you're going to say that because of Takonas Usha, she can't sell the Nichsa Malug, but why is the Mishnah ever understanding that a married woman, Giyosan Ra, and she has no assets to pay, she has an asset, she has the Ksuba, which she could sell the Tervis Hana. Even Rav Meir wouldn't have a problem with that, because you still don't have the Kala Bain of Lahitziah. Tosfos discusses over here in a little bit the point that based on other Gemaras, that it seems that Rav Meir's point is that when you don't have a ksuba, or when you have a smaller amount than you should have, then it's the ilasnus. So how exactly does that fit with what we're saying over here? It's a matter of kala ba'in of lahitziya. So Tosfos discusses how to reconcile the two points, and that we're talking about, in other words, is basically there's a t'nai that she's going to sell, that there's a t'nai involving her selling her ksuba. It's not a poiches, he didn't reduce the amount, but we're saying there's a t'nai, and that t'nai the mayor wouldn't allow because Kalabain of Loitzia, but the question is, it's not Kalabain of Loitzia because ultimately he's still paying out the same amount. So rather we can answer, here's a different reason why we can say she can't sell her ksuba. Ella, tovas hanam mili ninhu. Rather we can say it's not actual mammon. You don't have actual mammon involved over here yet. It's only words. Umili lo mishtabi. We can answer that words are not meshubad. In other words, we can say that she could sell her ksuba, but she doesn't need to because the ksuba itself, we're going to say, is not really an asset. It's only words. It's not considered mammon yet, and therefore she doesn't have a shibud to the nizik. So in other words, she could. So now the Gemara is saying, that's not what we're saying, is she could sell the ksuba for tovas hanah if she wants and use the money to pay the nizik, but we can't obligate her to do that. Because unlike the regular case of choyva b'chaveroi, or any mazit chaveroi, where now that creates a shibud on your property, where you're now obligated to go and pay the other person, here we would say that would not apply to the ksuba. That would not apply to the ksuba, and we would say that she's not obligated to sell the ksuba for tovas hanah.
Why do we make the house?
We're not. Why don't we make the husband pay? Because the husband himself is not we have earlier in the Masechta, we have an expression that when it says when an eved knani causes hezek, then you don't make the master pay, because then yelach v'yakintenu l'rabbi, what happens, the master is going to provoke the eved, and then the eved is going to cause huge amounts of damage, and it's going to be on the master to pay. So because the eved has das, therefore we don't want to say that the master should be chayav for his nizakim. By the same token, we can say over here, we don't want to make the husband responsible for his wife's nizakim, because same reason, then she may try to get back at her husband by causing tremendous amounts of hezek and put it on her husband to pay, and we don't want that. So it's going to be on her to pay, but we're saying right now she has no assets.
Because the husband's paying for her damage, that's why she's going to be angry
at him? No. In the case of an Eved, we learned previously on Daf Chaf Gimel, it actually comes from a mission in Yadayim where the Chachamim were arguing about it with the Tzedukim. The Tzedukim actually had brought an argument. They said you shouldn't be able to make a Kabbal Chomer. After all, if you have to pay for your animal causing damage, why shouldn't you have to pay for your Eved causing damage? And the Chachamim pointed out there's a big difference. An animal has no dax. An Eved has dax. The problem is, if you make the master responsible for the Eved's Nezakim, what's going to happen? The Eved is going to say, you know what, I don't like my master. I want to cause him huge amounts of damage. Therefore, I'm going to go cause as much Nezak as I can, and it's going to be on my master to pay. So therefore, we don't do that. By the same token, with a husband and wife, same point. We don't want, she's a bas das as well. We don't want the same kind of thing. We can't put the husband on the hook for his wife's nechassim because of the same problem. So no, she's definitely on the hook for it. What we're saying is, right now, she has no assets. Now, we're in the middle of discussing, so why can't she sell her ksuba, but tovus hanah? So now we're saying, so first we tried to say that she can't because of Rav Meir. We said that doesn't work because Rav Meir would have no problem with that. It's still not kalabein of loitzia. But now we're saying, sure, she could sell the ksuba, the tovus hanah, if she wants, but we can't obligate her to. So then, in that case, so therefore, the Mishnah can say, Giyosan Ra, be careful if you're tangling with an Isha, then you might end up worse for it in the sense that you're not going to have, because you're not going to be able to take her to Beis Din and require her to sell her ksuba, her tovus hanah, and other assets to pay with. She doesn't necessarily have, so therefore, yeah.
Although we will learn tomorrow, throughout the year, they always sound like she does actually gets money for it.
That's what we were saying. At the top of the Omer, we were saying she gets Tervis Hanah for it. But now we're saying, sure, she could sell it for Tervis Hanah. But we're saying, in terms of the Shibud to the Nizek, the Shibud to the Nechbal, so the person that she injured, there is no Shibud now, the Gemara is saying, because it's merely, because it's only words. But the Gemara doesn't like that either, because why not? It's not just words. After all, it's words that can be sold for money, because after all, the Tovus Hanah is something that it has a value. It's not just words. It's something that has an actual monetary value. It is, after all, an asset which somebody would be willing to pay for, and therefore that money should be mishubad to the nizik, to the nechbal, and therefore she should be required to pay him. No, rather we can say another reason why she doesn't sell her ksuba is based on Shmuel's din. Because Shmuel says in a general case, not specifically a ksuba, but in general, when you come to a shtar chayv, Shmuel says, shtar chayv, when a person sells a shtar chayv to somebody else, and then the seller goes and is moichel, that shtar chayv, mochel, then that's a valid mechila. So Reuven has a shtar chayv that Shimon owes him money. Reuven goes and sells that shtar chayv to Levi. Reuven has the right afterwards to go and be moichel that chayv, and therefore Levi now has a worthless piece of paper. He sold it, but nevertheless, he still has. Now, there are, we've shown and discussed various reasons why that should be. Is it because the whole concept of kinyan shtaris is only midrabanan, and therefore that doesn't take away his ability to cancel the debt, to be moichel the debt, or is it because There's a certain aspect of the shibud that remains with him, and he's able to be moichel that part? There's different ways of looking why exactly it is that they have this din, but you do have that din. So therefore, and Shmuel says v'afilu yodash moichel, and the fact is not only the original malva himself can be moichel, even his heir, even he passed away, and the debt was and his son takes over the estate. Nevertheless, the Yodish can be moichel as well. Now Tosfos does discuss over here the point that Reb Meir actually holds. You do have something called Dina de Garmi, which we'll talk about in more detail later in the Masechta Bez Hashem, where you have a person causes indirectly a certain kind of hezek to somebody else, and he's chayev to pay. And Reb Meir in particular holds that a person is chayev for Dina de Garmi. So Tosfos points out over here that he is chayev to pay for that. So therefore, different Rishonim discuss how much would a person have to pay for dinner to Garmi. But nevertheless, Tosfos says still she may take the view. You know what? Okay, because now, so what happened? In other words, so I'm selling my ksuba for Tovus Hanah, but because it's my ksuba, it's in effect the shtar chayv that I have based on Shmuel's din. I'm able to be moichelim. Yes, according to Reb Meir, the result is because now I caused a hezek to the person I sold it to, therefore I'm going to eventually have to pay him. You know what? Fine. Right now, at least I got some money out of it. Later on, when if I get widowed or divorced, I'm going to have to pay more because of the hezek I caused him. Fine. I'll worry about that when it comes to it. So therefore, to begin with, then, she's not selling her ksuba to pay the nechbal because she could be moichel it. So she could be moichalot. So therefore, so if we're going to make, so what's going to happen if we tell her sell your ksuba for tovas hana to pay this nechbal, to pay this person that you injured, she's going to go, okay, I'll sell my ksuba for tovas hana, and then instead of going and using the money to pay the nechbal, she's going to be moichal the ksuba or make the lekeach lose out, and therefore so to begin with, maybe the sale won't even go through. So to begin with, who's going to want to buy it from her? Under such conditions? So again, you have different rishonim discuss why it is that the malve has the ability to be moichel. Again, you have the Rif and the Rambam make a point that the whole concept of selling a shtar is only to Rabbanon. So therefore, that can't override the fact that Daraisa he can be moichel it. Rabbi Tam holds that you're selling the shibud nechosin, but you also have shibud aguf. You also have a shibud on individual person to pay off his chayv that you can't sell, and therefore the malva is able to be moichel that. And then there's a point Rashi elsewhere says that the vort is that the loiva can say to the lekeach, you know what, you want to collect, but la bal dvarim didiat. I didn't borrow the money from you. I have no business with you in Beis Din. So therefore you have no ability to collect. So there's a few different ways of understanding Shmuel's din, but that's how it is. So here again, what we're saying is that if we tell her to sell it, we're going to end up what it is if we tell her to sell it, it's not so much she won't be able to raise the money, but she can end up doing things in a way that'll cause the lekeach to lose out, and we don't want to do that. We don't want to make a takana where then she can go and play this trickery, this knunya life against the lekeach and cause him to lose his money. We don't want to do that. Keep in mind, of course, over here, you know, if she wants to pay the nechbal, then we're not dealing with this. We're talking about over here that she's apparently trying to evade paying him, so therefore we're concerned she may use any possible evasion. So Amri, but the Bnei HaYeshiva said, still, why is that a problem? Zabuni Zablin, Vititin Lei, fine, let her go exactly that. Let her go sell the Tzuba and pay the Nechbal the value that he should, the value that she should give him, the Imachla Lei, the Gabi Baal Timchala, and if she is going to be Moichel to the husband, fine, she's Moichel, so the Lekeach will lose out. Why is that our problem? Amri, so the answer, because it's not just a possibility that she might be Moichel. When it comes to her own husband, she's not going to be collecting the ksuba herself. She anyway sold it to Tervis Ana. We can assume that for sure she's going to be moicholet because after all, why should she make him lose out when she's not even going to get any hana from it? So she might as well be moicholet to him, and that way her husband gets out of paying the ksuba, and then the fact that the lekeach loses out, she's not going to care, because at least, in other words, if she was still going to be collecting her own ksuba, fine, she wouldn't be moicholet, but once she's anyway not going to be collecting it, because she sold it for Tervis Hanah, then we can assume almost for sure that she would go and be moicholet, and therefore it's going to cause fine, we might say, if it happens, if there were a possibility whether she might be moichel or not, then we'd say, lekeach, fine, you take your chance, buy it, the tevis hana, but where we're actually going to cause him to lose via diet, we're not going to tell her in the first place that she's required to sell the ksuba for tevis hana to pay the fellow that she injured, and therefore we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that in the first place. And again, here's where Tosfos points out that first of all, you have the machlokas, whether if she does do that, is she actually paying at all? According to, if we say that she's potter for dinit, the garmi should be potter entirely. If we say she's chayev, is she chayev the full amount or only a lesser amount? But in any case, the point is, the guy is certainly not going to be, she's not going to be paying him now, she's not going to be paying him now, and therefore we don't want to do that. So, in other words, so far what we can say is that it's true she could sell her ksuba, but because of the consideration we just said, we're not going to require her to, and therefore, uh, and then, and therefore the Mishnah can say as a general statement that a woman does not have assets to pay. Now, if she has nichsim alug, then we can talk about is takonas usha valid? Does she have to sell those nichsim alug? There you can't talk about being moichel because those are actual assets, not just a promise to pay like the ksuba is. But there we have the question of whether takonas usha is valid and therefore she can't sell them or not. But as far as the ksuba, we're saying she could in principle sell it, but because of this consideration that then she could be moichel it and cause the lekeach to lose, we don't want to do that. We don't want to make her do that.
Sein Barzel
is something else. If there are nichsim alug. So nichsim alug, we're saying if there's no takonas usha, now the payers belong to the husband, the goof belongs to her, right? So if takonas usha is not valid, then yes, she could sell that goof. She could sell that goof, and the husband can't block that. But if there's takonas usha, then she can't do that. Okay. So the Gemara continues. V'chi tema. Now you might argue like this. Still, why don't we say let her sell the ksuba zavina ni'alei lahu dechav lebei b'tayvus hanah. So why don't we say like this? You know what? Let her sell it. Let her sell the ksuba to the one that she injured himself for the tovus hanah. Instead of talking about selling to a third person, where then there's the possibility that she might be moichel and cause that third party to lose out, why don't we say that she sells the ksuba to the person himself whom she injured for tovus hanah, and then in other words, so that way she's paying off the whole chavala like that. The imochlo the gabe bal lo kamafsid, because then even if she's moichel the ksuba to the husband, the nechbal still won't lose out the hashdanami lo midikayavale, because after all, right now she's not actually giving him anything. Now, Tosfos points out, you still do have the consideration that if she doesn't sell him huksuba, he may be able to collect from her at a future date when she's widowed or divorced. Now, if she sells it to him b'tovus hanah and she's moichel to her husband, he is going to lose out. So why don't we say that? Tosfos says that's true, but right now, look, she wouldn't have been giving him anything one way or the other anyway. So therefore, if she's moichel, she's not really causing him such a loss. He's not really losing out anything now that he wouldn't have gotten anyway. And even la'achazman, after all, what if she dies first and her husband yashins her? So therefore, in other words, the guy may be willing to take the chance that she won't be moichel, and therefore at least we'll say that he stands to gain, and if he loses, he's not losing anything that he didn't have in the first place. And the answer is soif. After all, kol legabe baal vadim machla. As we said, we can assume she's going to be moichel the ksuba to her husband, because again, she's not collecting it anyway, so she figures she may as well be moichel it and take that responsibility off her husband. We don't want to be matriach based in for nothing. If we have this kind of thing, if we make her sell the ksuba to the nechbal itself, the tovus hanah, means in other words, we're involving Beisdin for something which may not even end up coming, nothing practical may come out of it anyhow, because she ends up being moichel it. Fine, the guy hasn't lost anything that he didn't otherwise have, but he's not gaining anything either. We don't really want to go and get Beisdin involved for something that may turn out to be a whole big nothing. So Maushah explains, so Tosfos again had brought up this point about Tiruchei Beidina in this connection, and Maushah talks about, in other words, that since we're saying, in effect, you have the sale over here is not a sale, Bechlal, because she's going to be Moichel to her husband, and right now she's not paying out anything, so therefore, even if she ends up paying, as Tosfos says, even if according to the mayor, she may at a future date end up paying because of Dina Degami, nevertheless, right now we can call it Atruchi Bey Dina, that would be Matriach the based in for nothing. Okay. So the Gemara says, Elo Hodetanya. Okay, what about though this that we learn in a Braisa, V'chein hi shechovla b'baila, a Braisa says, the same way as we were talking about, that if she injures somebody else, she's not having to pay out right now, because again, she doesn't have any assets of her own, meaning a chosim of her own to pay out with. And then we have this whole discussion, conceivably she could sell Hoksuba, but we have, again, what we were just saying, that may not work. What about, though, a Braisa says, V'chein hi shechavla b'bayla, if she injured her own husband, And again, it doesn't matter whether the Mezid or the Shogig or whatever, because as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, it doesn't matter, or the Mord Loilam. Anyway, Loihik Siduk Subasa, the Bryce says she has not forfeited her Ksuba, meaning, in other words, we don't say that we deduct that from her Ksuba. Now we have to ask, am I? Why ever not? Why shouldn't we require her to sell her ksuba to her own husband for tovas hanah? Again, keeping in mind that he may end up paying it out or not, depending what happens later in the marriage. She has to pay him for this injury that she did. And so she should sell it to him, b'tovas hanah, the mochel gavid baal lekap seder. And just like as we said a couple of lines ago, that if she were to sell the ksuba to the nechbal himself, b'tovas hanah, then the nechbal doesn't stand to lose, because whatever he loses is something he didn't have in the first place anyhow, if she's mochel the ksuba. Well, we should say the same thing over here. When she injured her own husband, we should require her to sell the ksuba to her husband, Tavis Hanah. If she's later on moichel the ksuba to her husband, fine. The husband hasn't gained anything, but he hasn't lost anything either. Why don't we say that? So why don't we say that she forfeits her ksuba, or that at least something, she should have to do something? And the answer is, ha vade Reb Meir. This definitely, we have to say, goes according to Reb Meir. Drama also autumn, she yasha es ishta, after the shalachas below ksuba, where he says that a husband can't stay with his wife for even a short time without a ksuba. The time of my they take talib in of Lysia, because as we said before, we don't want to make it easy for him to divorce her. So then, ha, so here the problem is, meganish law, here if she sells him a ksuba, then he may go ahead and figure he's free to divorce her, because gobi le b'chav l'minei, after all, he's collecting the ksuba for himself, for the chabala. So in other words, that he's gonna figure, look, she injured me, I'm owed, therefore, X amount of money for her, for the chavala, for the nezek tzar, etc. So now, fine, if she's required to sell me her ksuba, the tervis hanah, fine, right now I have to pay out a little bit of tervis hanah, but now it becomes very easy for me to divorce her. And as far as the ksuba, I would have to pay her, she'd have to pay me right back for the chavala, so therefore it's very easy for me to divorce her. And again, since we don't want that, the whole point of the ksuba is to avoid that, then therefore we can't make her sell it to him, the tervis hanah. But the Gemara says, Yehochi hash the nami megarishla. Well then, so what's the difference then? Even now, if she doesn't sell it to her, it'll still be kalabaina. He would still go divorce her, the gavi la b'chav l'mineh, mina. And the same thing. After all, it doesn't matter whether there was a sale or not. Either way, you could say the same thing. That she injured him, he's now owed X amount of money, so he's going to say, you know what, unlike a normal case where if I divorce her, then I'm on the hook for a large amount of money. Here, if I divorce her, I'm getting that money right back for the chavala. So then you still have the problem of kalabain or lahitzia. The answer is, because we can answer, the answer is that her ksuba is larger than the amount of the ksuba is larger than the amount of the chavala. Yeah. Meanwhile, Tosfos points out, by the way, to begin with, the Gemara knew that we're talking about the ksuba is greater than the chavala, because we were talking about that she sells her ksuba for only tovas hanah and pays the chavala. So doesn't that mean, to begin with, the chavala of necessity had to be less than the ksuba, because the tovas hanah is a much smaller amount relative to the ksuba? Tosfos points out, fine, what we meant before is not to pay the whole chavala, but now part of it, but only part of it. Here, the Gemara is assuming that we're talking about, again, when we're saying, isn't there the problem that he's going to say, if I pay out the ksuba, she's paying the whole thing right back out to me? No, because if we're talking about the ksuba is larger than the chavala, so he's still going to say, look, if I pay her out for 200 zuz, I'm only getting 50 or 100 of it back for my chavala, so therefore it's not kalabain of Leitzia. Because he still knows that he's on the hook for a certain amount, which he's not getting back.
Right, what's about all the others, whichever shit that has
When we say chavala, we mean all the payments, nezek tzar, etc. It could be not. But we're saying, what the Gemara is saying is, the braisa that we just quoted before, that says, loy hifsidik subasa, is talking about a case where the chavala is less in the total amount that she should have to pay for the chavala, is less than the total value of the ksuba. So therefore, it's going to cost him, therefore he's not going to want to divorce her. The mishuma who purta, loy maksid tuva, he's not going to want to lose out a little bit. He's not going to want, because of the little bit amount that he's going to gain for the chavala, he's not going to want to divorce her and lose a large amount of money. In other words, again, you know, he's going to have to pay her out 200 zuz and he's got 50 back for the chavala, for the nezek tzar, etc. It's not going to be worth it. Well, the Gemara says, the e, the nefishuk subasim ksuba daraisa. Okay, but we should ask if, you know, you have to consider there's Ikur Ksuba and there's Tosfos Ksuba. When the mayor is saying that a man and wife are not allowed to live together without a ksuba, that's talking about only as far as the ikur ksuba, the basic 100 for an almana or 200 for a besula. So if we're talking about the ksuba is larger in value than the ksuba daraisa, if there is a tosfos ksuba involved, and Rishonim, by the way, discussed the question, do we actually mean daraisa? Do we mean that the chiyuv ksuba is actually daraisa? There's a big machlokas on that, which we learned at the end of ksubas. Adayem azash, kenazik ksubas, say the chozi lichim daraisa, and svardik ksubas do not. But here, the Rashba says, we don't, strictly speaking, mean that the ksuba is daraisa. We just mean that it's like a chiyuv daraisa. It's a very strong chiyuv.
The megas everyone gives.
Right. Well, no, the halacha is everyone has to give, but it's a machlokas whether it's daraisa or daraisa. Anyway, so if you're going to say that the ksuba is larger than the ksuba daraisa, what's the problem? Noikma ksuba daraisa, then fine. Let's say that we're going to say that the husband has to pay out, that the husband has to pay out the ksuba daraisa, the idach, as far as the tosfos ksuba, tizabni miyalei v'chavolei, that she could sell to him on tovus hanah, for the and to pay for the chavolah, because after all, that's not going to impinge on Tekala Be'en Avotziah. He's still going to be out 100 or 200 zuz for the Ikur Ksuba, so why don't we require that? And the answer is, to have a chavolah abar zuz. The case could be, for example, that the value of the chavolah is only 4 zuz. He's not going to want to lose 25 because of 4. Meaning, in other words, so now you have like this. Rashi explains that 25 means 25 sloin. A sela consists of 4 zuz. So 25 sloin equals 100 zuz. That is the ksuba of an almana. So therefore, we're talking about, according to Rashi, we're saying, in other words, if the chavola is worth only 4 zuz, he's still not going to want to have that. He's still not going to want to divorce. So in other words, the question is, So what we're saying is that why don't we say that she should? The question was why she doesn't sell him the tosfos ksuba. So the answer is that we're talking about that. In fact, sorry, the loin of fisher ksubasa was an answer. The loin of fisher ksubasa ksuba daraisa is the answer. We're talking about where her ksuba is no larger than the basic amount. There is no tosfos ksuba. And the case is dahave chavle abad mishum abal lemafsid esrim b'chamisha. What we're saying is, after all, the husband, yes, if the chavala was a large amount, if it was the whole 200 zuz or close to it, it might be a problem of kala ba'ein of lohitzia. But we're saying when the chavala is very small relative to the value of the ksuba, it's 4 zuz. The ksuba meanwhile is 25 sloim, which is 100 zuz for an amana. He's not going to say kala ba'ein of lohitzia. Let me divorce her and I'll get my 4 zuz, because then he's still out 96 zuz. Tosfos actually brings a girsa that the word is esrim v'chamisha zuz. And in that case, then what we'd be talking about now, how is a ksuba 25 zuz? Because the Gemara talks about elsewhere, we're actually going to talk about it tomorrow in the Gemara, about kesef tsuri versus kesef medina, where kesef medina is worth 1/8 of kesef tsuri. You have the same denominations, but it's worth 1/8 as much. So therefore, 25 zuzim of kesef tsuri equal 200 zuz of kesef medina, which would be the amount for a besula if we say that the ksuba is dirabanan. So in other words, so all gemara can be taken, depending on the girsa, as talking about the case of an almana whose ksuba is dirabanan, which is 100 zuz, or it can be talking about a besula whose ksuba, according to some opinions, is daraisa, but according to other opinions, is also dirabanan and consists of 200 zuzim of kesef medina, which equals 25 zuzim of kesef tsuri. When the Gemara mentions 25, then it may be referring to that. So it depends. Ashkenazim follow the psak of the Rishonim, who say that it is daraisa, and therefore we write in our ksuba shechazi lichem daraisa for a b'sola, for an amon or a grisha or whatever. Definitely not. Everybody agrees that that's the rabbanon. For Saudim, they don't write daraisa because they hold, according to the opinions, that the ksuba even for a b'sola is the rabbanon. Anyway, so that's the case. In other words, so the Braisa can be talking about a case where the chavola is very small relative to the ksuba, so there's no kala ba'in of loitzia because he's not going to want to divorce her and have to pay out most of the ksuba and only get a little bit of it back. It's true that if it was a larger amount, you would have that problem of kala ba'in of loitzia, and then in fact, then we have to make other arrangements. Well, then we can say that she doesn't pay at all, because then she does. Then should we say she has no assets to pay. And if we were to say she pays out of Uksuba, then you have the problem of Palabane of Leitzia. Okay. Well, the Gemara says Ella Hodetanya. Fine. What about though that same Braisa that we brought before that says that if she injures her husband, she doesn't have to pay out, but she doesn't lose Uksuba. The Braisa continues. Just as she does not have to sell her ksuba while she's still married to him, for the reasons that we talked about, now the Gemara assumes, Rashi explains that the Gemara assumes that the Braisa means she's not able to sell it while she's tacked up because of the problems we said before, that the Palabain of Leitzia and all that. The same way she doesn't lose her ksuba when she's still married to him. So it sounds like but the problem is v'hazimnin mashkacha demafsida. It depends. Sometimes she might lose the heichidami given in a fish uksubas and uksuba daraisa. Because we just said if uksuba is larger than the basic uksuba daraisa, then she does lose out because that extra amount we're going to make her sell and pay her husband. And then there's no kalabain of loitzia because you still have the basic 100 or 200 zuz. Why is the braisa saying as a blanket statement that she never loses uksuba when it'll depend? Omar Rava. So Rava says because you have to consider something else. Sefer asal ksubas b'nin dichrin. The sefer is talking about the special takana of ksubas b'nin dichrin, which we learned about in ksubas, that when the ksubas b'nin dichrin is a tnai ksuba that says that the sons that she has with her husband are going to yarshin her ksuba if she dies first. So we learned in ksuba. So you have the scenario. Let's say he has two wives. He's married to Leah and Rachel. And what we say is if Rachel dies before him, then we say that so normally we would say he yarshins her ksuba and that's that. But instead, Ksubas Benin Dichrin tells us we earmark the amount of Uksuba and we set it aside from the Yerusha that her sons from him, that Rachel's sons specifically, get that, and then the rest of the Yerusha they divide with their half brothers, the sons of Leah.
Why should the different mothers' money go to strangers?
No, it doesn't go to strangers at the point. It goes to her own sons. Rachel had a Ksuba of 200 zuz, let's say, so the basic amount for a ksuba. Now, what we're saying is, if Rachel dies before her husband, yes, her husband yarshins it, but eventually, when her husband himself dies, we're going to take 200 zuz out of that and earmark it. It's going to go specifically to Rachel's children, to Rachel's sons, and the rest is going to be divided evenly between Rachel's and Leah's children. So now, Rava says, the sefer of the Braisa is talking about that point. It's talking about ksubas ben indichrin. So now, v'hochi katani. So when the Braisa says, so what the Braisa means is like this. K'shem sh'amecheres ksubas al-acherim lo hifsidik ksubas min indichrin. The same way as when she sells the ksuba to somebody else, even if she dies first, the ksubas min indichrin is not forfeited. The children still get the ksubas min indichrin after their father dies. And we don't say that she forfeited it by selling the ksuba for tovas hanah. So Robert interjects, my time is Zuzi Hudansua. Why would we say that? Because we wouldn't consider it that she was Peshea. We would say it was like an onus. She needed money, and therefore she sold the ksuba. Kach, mecheres ksubas labaila. The same way, if she sells the ksuba to her husband himself, which, by the way, Tosfos points out, she's not really necessarily allowed to do that. We said before that going to the mayor, that creates a problem. But we're talking about if she was over and sold it to her husband. But if she was over and sold it to her husband, or you could be talking about that she sold only her toys for ksuba. Anyway, so the same way when she sells it to her husband, lo yifsidu ksubas min indichrin, she hasn't forfeited for her children ksubas min indichrin, even if she dies first, my time is zuzi hodan sua, for the same reason, because she was forced to by the need for money. It's not considered pshia. In other words, if she was Peshea, then we would say she forfeited for her children. What we're saying, in both these cases, there's no Pshia. So the second part of the Braisa, in other words, is not saying that when there's a choice for Ksuba, she's not losing anything in terms of a Chavala because she doesn't have to pay her husband. She does. She has to pay out of her choice for Ksuba. The Braisa is saying something else. In all cases, though, she's not, when she sells the Ksuba, the Tovas Hana, whether to somebody else or whether to her husband, either way, the Ksuba's Menin Dichrin stays intact. So that second part of the braisa has nothing directly to do with our discussion over here of whether she has to pay her husband with a chavala or not. And we can indeed say that when there's a tosfos ksuba, that she does pay her husband, because that won't impinge on the basic ksuba. You still won't have kalaba ein of lahitziah, and therefore you don't have that problem, and nevertheless she's paying her husband. But it's true that when she only has a basic ksuba, then she's not paying her husband, because then you'd have the problem of kalaba ein of lahitziah. Is it takonis chachamim?
Even if she sells it,
but Tervis Hanan, nevertheless, the children still get the Tzumas Menin Dichrin. That's what we're saying. Okay. The Gemara continues. Lema Takonas Usha Tanoi. Do we have to say, maybe, that the whole concept of whether Takonas Usha is valid is actually a Machloikas Tanoi? The Tony Choda Avdim Lug Yotzin Meshain Va'ayin, because one Brisa says, suppose you have Avodim Knanim that are Nichsim Lug. So again, she owns the goof, the husband is entitled to have them work for him as long as they're married. So one Brisa says that if the eye of truth was knocked out, and as we know, then the slave goes free, so then one Brisa says, L'isha avaloy l'ish, only if the wife knocked out the eye or the tooth, then she's their owner, then they go free, but not if the husband did, because he's not considered their owner. No, they don't belong to him, they belong to her. He only gets the payers. So one Brisa says, if he were to knock out the slave's eye or tooth, he wouldn't go free. Same way as if I own a slave, and you knock out his eye and tooth, you know, he doesn't go free, only if I do. So that's the master himself, does it? It's nichsim alog. Yeah, the tanya idach loyla ish v'loyla isha. Another brisa says neither if she knocks out his eye nor if he does. So savrua. Now, for purposes of the question, we assume when we say that maybe the machlokas tanoim has to do with this matter of takonas usha, we're going to assume that both of them hold kinyan peiros lav to kinyan agufdami. That the fact that the husband owns the peiros of the eved is not considered that he owns the eved itself, which, as we've learned before, is machlokas Rav Yochanan Rish Lakish. And we said this is one of those cases where the halacha is like Rish Lakish, and we said that in fact kinyan peiros lav to kinyan aguf. So we're going to assume that both tanoim hold of that concept. So therefore, my lab b'hokamifli. Well, then wouldn't that mean the machlokas? The manda amale isha, the one who says that if the woman knocks out the slave's eye or tooth, less than takonas usha, he doesn't hold a takonas usha. She has complete ownership over the avodim, even to the extent that she could sell them. Therefore, she's considered the eved's master, and therefore, if she knocks out the eye or tooth, then she's chayiv to free him. Where is the one who says that even if she knocks out the eye or tooth, he doesn't go free, would hold of takonas usha. So therefore, in other words, she doesn't have a complete kinyan on the asset. She can't sell it without her husband's permission, and therefore it's not considered that she's the full owner, that she should be chayiv in shame vayim. So in that case, that would mean that that would come out then that it's a machlokas tanoim, whether takonas usha or not. And after all, for the same reason, if the husband injures the eved either, it wouldn't work either, because after all, he doesn't own the goof either. But the Gemara says, loy, not necessarily, dekula alma islu takonas usha, both tanoim of these brises may hold a takonas usha. Ella kan koden takona kan lacha takona. Very simple. One brisa is talk. One brisa was composed before takona sosha, and the other was composed after it. The boisema aidi ba aidi laacha takona. Or you could say that both of them are after takona sosha. The isto takona sosha, and both of them do hold of takona sosha that the husband can block the sale, but. Ella lamanda omal leisha v'loy leish. The first brisa that says that if she injures the eved, then he goes free. Why is that? My timer kidded Rava is based on what Rava says. The Omar Rava hektish chometz v'shichur machkiin midei shib. Because Rava says that if a person had an asset which he then made hektish. So if a person had a shibud, so Reuven had borrowed money from Shimon. He now has a shibud to Shimon. Let's say, for example, he took his shur and made an apusiki and says, you, Shimon, when you collect, you can collect from this shur. Now, Reuven goes and is makdish that shur. We say that takes away the shibud, and now the shur can be brought as a korban. Because it was only a shibud, he didn't actually own it. Rashi and Tosfos both point out over here this would only work with Kedushas HaGuf. If it was Kedushas Domim, if it was only that he had donated the shur to Bedek HaBayis, then we would say it has to be bought back from Bedek HaBayis and given to the one who has the shibud, to the Malveh. But here we're talking about with Kedushas HaGuf, where he designated as a korban, then we're saying that takes away the shibud. Chometz, similarly, when you have a case of chometz where a goy lent a yid money, and the yid gave him chometz as collateral, and the yid keeps the chometz in his property, he doesn't give it, he doesn't put it in the goy's property. So now when Pesach comes, so the goy only has a shibud on it, when it comes Pesach, then the issur chometz takes away the shibud, because now the chometz is also b'hanah, so therefore the shibud on it goes away. And Rava continues with shichur and freeing an eved again, where the eved is an apositi. So all those maskiyin midei shibud, all of those take away a shibud. So in this case, the first braisa would say, since she injured the eved shein va'ayin, so now she has to free him, as the Torah says. Therefore, that's an example of shichur maskiyin midei shibud, and therefore it takes away the husband's shibud. So I takanas usha, but in this case, her shichur overrides that. Well, the Gemara asks, lema the Rava tanoihi. Well, does that mean we would have to say that Rava's own din is itself the subject of a machlokas tanoim? And the answer is loy, jekula alma isluhu de Rava. No, they could both tanoim could agree with Rava's din. Bahocha al mur rabban, the shibur de baal. The question would be, did the chachamim strengthen the husband's shibur? Would they say normally, yes, shichur takes away a shibur? But here, the husband's shibur, because of takanas usha, is so strong that it will override this normal rule, or do we not say that? Another possibility we could say is that, yeah, it's true, neither Tana of these braises holds of Takanas Usha, but we could say the machlokas is whether Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf. The fact that the husband has a Kinyan Peres on the Eved, is that enough to make it considered that he has a certain ownership of the Guf? If yes, then it means that he and his wife own the Eved jointly, and that if neither one of them, if they injure the Eved, is going to cause the Eved to go free because neither one is the exclusive owner. Whereas if we say Kinyan Peres, Lavka, Kinyan Aguf, so in other words, we could say they're all arguing on the same machlokas as Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, whether Kinyan Peres for Kinyan Aguf. If they hold the Kinyan Peres, Lav for Kinyan Aguf, then only the wife is the real owner of the Eved. If we say Kinyan Peres for Kinyan Aguf, then both of them are, and that could also explain the difference between the braises. So we have several ways of explaining which don't require us to say that the whether Takanas Usha is accepted or not is a machlokas tanoim, and then we'll continue, the discussion will continue and finish off tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.